Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right, Reggie, back where you belong.
What's that? I can read your lips now. I'm getting good at that. Yes, it's going to be a lighter show. Believe me. I know we've had some sentimentality about throwing memories away and talking about race relations. Let's have some fun, okay? That's the whole idea of this. So, but sometimes, you know, you have to be in the moment. So anyway, I promise this episode will be a little lighter. Okay. I see our needles are jumping. Mike is hot. Talent, as usual, is hotter. Thank you very much. All right, let's go. Put it in the books. Episode 212, I believe, right? Yeah, 212. All right, I'll do the three S's, and then I'll give you a countdown, and we will get this podcast started. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you find and download your favorite podcasts. We are there. Don't forget to subscribe to those platforms and rate this podcast as high as you can. But most importantly, tell your friends. Send them a message. Send them a link. Tell them in person. Whatever it is you do. However you're communicating in a COVID world, do that and let them in on the cool secret that you have discovered. That the best podcast around is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck aren't they listening to it? I understand that, you know, you may have a little sense of ownership. But after a while, you want to share. You find a lost treasure, right? At first, you dig it up and you find it. And then you go, this is so cool. And you don't want to tell anybody. But there comes a point when you have to tell someone, right? You got to share your good fortune. And your good fortune here is hopefully spending an hour with me every week. So now that you have been selfish enough, it's time to share. And don't forget, if you're new to the podcast or if you've been here since the beginning, we just recently celebrated our fourth year. This is episode 212. And you say, 212? I didn't even know there was 112. Well, you know how you can find that out is go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section. You'll see a listing for this podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Go in there, and you will find all previous 211 episodes. And you can catch up. But don't forget, first listen to episode 212. Actually, as I've said to folks here many times before who listen on a regular basis, it is good to go back and listen to previous podcasts because I frequently will refer to either topics that I've talked about or specific little things that I've talked about in a certain podcast. And the whole idea is that we're in this together. We're talking to each other, hopefully. It's a dialogue. It's a one-way dialogue. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's basically what a podcast is. And it's basically, at least my goal, is to create a one-way dialogue. It's only one way. I'm only speaking to you, but hopefully I can do it in such a way that you feel that we are speaking to one another. And I, as usual, I thank all those who regularly, or maybe you've never done it and you'd like to, make a comment about a specific podcast. I do post links to this podcast on my Facebook page, which is Jim Toronto. So feel free to go there and put a comment, positive or negative. I am open to all viewpoints. I offer many viewpoints. I am, complimentary on things. I am, against a few things. I don't know what you would say, but I'm also for anything positive or negative. Don't worry about it. Don't feel that you need to temper anything. If there's a certain podcast or something that I said, you want some feedback, like, geez, I didn't understand what you were saying, or how could you say that? I don't mind. I look forward to and I appreciate and consider all views. So your input is important. So don't be afraid if you feel like posting something on there, good, positive, or negative. Don't worry about it. So, yeah, last week I was talking to Reggie, the producer here, before we got started about the last couple of weeks. Two podcasts ago, episode 210 was very sentimental. I was going through old pictures and just getting old memories of family and friends, and got a little emotional, which was fine. I don't mind bearing my soul for you. And last week was a little heavy in the midst of the protests and the rioting, and which are the protests going on now over the recent George Floyd incident, in which a Minneapolis policeman murdered, I guess. I mean, allegedly, right? We still, it's not official yet, but certainly led to the death of a African-American man right on the streets. So we're all aware of what's happened over the last week or so now, 2 weeks of this, and it is still a major topic. But, I don't want to dwell on this. I mean, I think it was important for me to comment on it because I felt compelled to at least share my view as to what we can do to hopefully come together and affect real change, not just rhetoric. And so every so often, yeah, I mean, this place, hopefully, as I said many times, this podcast is a nice little safe haven, sometimes a distraction from the issues and the hardships of the day. And we have certainly had those in 2020. Wow, what a year this has been. But sometimes, I think it would be irresponsible not to every so often on occasion when the topic merits it, that I do address things that are a little more serious. That's who we are. We're all living amongst this, right? The goal of this podcast for me is to always just share with you things going on in my mind, in my life, in my experience. And so certainly, talking on a little heavier subjects every once in a while goes with the territory. And I do appreciate some kind words that people said about the last podcast. I was a little worried that it was a little heavy and it was a little away from the usual, but I'm glad to see that people either enjoyed it, or at the very least, if you didn't agree with of all my points, that's fine too. We don't have to agree on everything. Hopefully we have more in common, or we touch more things that we like about one another than we don't. But you don't have to agree with everything, I think. Hopefully that's the goal here, too. We've got into this kind of world here where if I don't agree with you, I have to hate you. And that's not the way we move forward. So I feel confident and comfortable enough with sharing with you, the audience, my views on things. And if you don't agree, I say that's fine. I hope it doesn't turn you off to never want to listen again, because it's there's other things that we might agree on. So that's called a relationship. That's called a friendship. You know, often we say how opposites attract, or that many times your best friends are the friends who fill in your gaps and you fill in theirs, vice versa. So, you know, I feel like I've always tried to be as open and honest and sharing with you, and hopefully you can at least appreciate the effort. You don't have to always agree with the content, but at least you hopefully appreciate the honesty and the effort of trying to make a connection and trying to share with you. And that's all we're here for, right? So then, with that said, with that disclaimer, I have to say that, you know, this the COVID world has been, there's so many layers to this story. And it really is continuing to evolve. And what we were experiencing back in March, and then in April, and then in May, is now certainly both different and the same here in June. Certainly the world has changed since March, and certainly the overall outlook on COVID has changed. I don't know if that's necessarily good. I don't see the numbers declining enough to warrant some of the openness of our society after the shutdown, but I don't know. I've said this a few times before. We're either in major denial, or we just don't care, or we're just going to keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. And if you get it, you get it. That's what seems to be where we're going. But I don't want to get on that subject. We've been hearing different things. I do have to mention one thing. I do feel sorry for Dr. Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who, you know, over the last several months has become something of a pop culture star and a rock star, at least initially. He was the voice of authority and the voice of reason early on in this COVID world. Appearing at the daily press conferences that President Trump was doing. And he certainly was the voice of authority. He was the expert. He was talking about the COVID virus and the projections of the transmission and both being very honest as well as somewhat comforting. But at the same time, he was really trying to be, upfront about the seriousness of this. And it was refreshing to hear honesty for many people, because most people, when we see a politician or any kind of a leader up by a microphone, we almost automatically believe that what we're hearing is not going to be the truth or all the truth, or it's going to certainly have been vetted and spun by handlers before, and it's going to be very measured. And Fauci really didn't cut any corners. He just laid it on the line, and people were attracted to that. They found that appealing. The same thing with Andrew Cuomo, Governor Cuomo in New York. His daily press briefings during the March and April and May were very blunt, and people respected that. And I feel sorry for Fauci now, because like him, I'm looking at these numbers and I don't see the numbers going down in terms of, in any appreciable way. And we're actually seeing the numbers in many areas that have opened up their states going up. You're not hearing that being reported as much. But I just saw a recent story and a recent interview with Dr. Fauci. And yeah, in places like Florida and other places where, public places have been opened with very liberal and open realities and the restrictions taken away, we have seen upticks. But, you know, the media now, the media clearly has decided that the story is not pandemic and fear. The story is about open. We're opening. And while they are showing those daily totals of those numbers in terms of how many deaths and how many people have tested positive and what the total numbers are, you're not seeing that really get a lot of play. It's very interesting. There was a certain point here where I guess the populace just said we're tired of living under a lockdown, and so we now think that the virus is gone. Well, the virus is not gone. We're going to find that out. We're finding that it is more important for people to get a drink at a bar or get a cheeseburger at a restaurant than it is to either stay healthy themselves or to potentially not pass a virus on to someone else. The virus is spreading. It continues to spread. As I said many times, as Dr. Fauci has said, this virus does not move on its own. We pass it along. And I can only imagine the next month or so what kind of numbers we're going to see after the protests that have happened over the last couple of weeks. Nothing wrong with protesting, but there certainly wasn't a lot of social distancing going on, and some people had masks on and some people didn't, and people were shoulder to shoulder, and people were congregating, and I understand the emotion, I understand the anger, I understand the fear, I understand all that, but it did happen in a pandemic, and those pandemic rules still apply. They don't get pushed away just because something else seems more important. So some people individually, as well as us as a society, may pay health-wise for those protests. We'll see. Who knows? But I feel sorry for Dr. Fauci because he is still very worried about this disease. He's trying to get people's attention to say this is not over with. We want it to be over with. Our boredom, our restlessness, whatever it is, we want it to be over with, but it isn't. It's still around and it's still spreading and it's still dangerous, and it could actually be worse if we continue to push, let down our guard. It can get worse than it was back in March and April. And he's trying to impress that point on people. And clearly, the media isn't listening as once they were, which means the people aren't listening, or vice versa. One feeds the other. And I feel sorry for him because he's kind of shouting in the forest right now. And he is the expert. He's devoted his entire life to this. I do trust what he says. I don't trust my neighbors or my friends or people that just seem to think this is a hoax. We seem to have a lot. I didn't even know how many average people on the street are experts in infectious disease. I did not realize it. Now, clearly, a huge number of people in our society are experts on infectious diseases because they have made up their minds that this is either a hoax, or that they don't need to wear a mask in public, or that they don't need to social distance. So they clearly know more than experts do, or they are experts too. I had no idea that infectious disease was such an important and popular major in college, or that the average person, clearly, who didn't even go to college, but somehow got all this information and knows more than people who have dedicated 40 or 50 years of their life to just this one subject of infectious diseases. It seems as if the average American knows as much, if not more, than many of the experts like Dr. Fauci. Amazing. That's, to me, that's the biggest revelation, is how the average American seems to know more about infectious disease than some experts that have been studying it for 40 or 50 years, because clearly they must know. Because they have decided that wearing a mask and social distancing is not important. And they seem to know that this disease is not infectious. Even though the experts tell us different, the average person out there seems to know more than the experts do. At least that's how they're acting. So that's the big revelation to me. Who knew that the average person was so knowledgeable about infectious disease? I had no idea. I really didn't. But it seems as if
most people on the street today who don't wear masks and don't social distance, they could actually be the head of the CDC, right? Based on their feelings that I don't need to wear a mask or I don't need to social distance because there's no pandemic. We have I didn't realize how astute and how knowledgeable the majority of our citizens were on infectious disease. So that's quite a revelation. But anyway, I digress, as I usually do, which is why you come to an Elton Jim podcast, right? If I didn't digress, it would be fun. And I'd be done in 15 minutes, right? But as you'll see, as much as I wander off into the weeds, I always come back to the main road. And I'm making my way back to the main road right now. My initial point was, boy, this COVID world is odd, right? And we're all adjusting to it. And we'll continue to adjust to it because I don't think it's going away. I know I'm in the minority. I know the majority of people believe it's over and are acting as such. I don't know. Call me crazy. Call me old-fashioned. When I've got a problem with my pipes, I don't call an electrician. I call a plumber. I call an expert, and I put faith in the expert's experience and knowledge as opposed to my own or someone else who thinks they know how to fix it. I'll go with the pro every time. And a lot of times, I think I will wind up on the winning side. But that's fine. Do what you want. So, yeah, we're all adjusting to the COVID world. And one of the things that we've had to, I think all of us at this point now, 6 months into the new year, we all have had to sacrifice things that we have either had planned to do this year up to this point and beyond, or things that we look forward to doing that, unfortunately, the COVID-19 pandemic has just, they've just proven to be too unsafe for the public and have been either postponed or canceled until next year. And there's no guarantees that these things may even happen next year. You know, we don't really know. Although some people do know. Okay, I'll get off of that. But over the course of these podcasts, I have spoken about some events that I really enjoy. Now, I think I've mentioned to you before here, up until this point of the year, already from March, just from March, I have had 10 individual concerts postponed. I had tickets to 10 concerts from between the end of March through June. I had 10 concerts that I would have attended, would have attended through this month, postponed. 3 Broadway shows I had tickets to, which obviously were canceled. 2 vacations, one a kind of once in a lifetime vacation that we had planned for more than a year to celebrate our anniversary, sadly canceled. And another one, which was going to be fun, just a little quick jaunt to New York, which is where those Broadway tickets were for, canceled. And other events canceled. For instance, here in the Chicago area, one of my fun summertime activities was to see several different shows at Ravinia, the Ravinia Festival, the outdoor music venue here in the suburbs of Chicago. That entire outdoor season canceled. Over the last couple of weeks, news in Chicago on some major events like the Blues Fest and the Jazz Fest and the Gospel Fest and Taste of Chicago, the biggest draw of the summer here for the last many, many years, Lollapalooza, the big rock concert extravaganza in Grant Park, recently canceled. It was due for late July and early August. So it seems as if, you know, the summer, the spring and the summer around our worlds in many, at least here in the Chicago area, have been canceled. Now, once again, you go and you look around, and some states are still open and are opening, and things like Disney is opening. It's going to be a restricted Disney experience, but I guess the doors will be opening. So places are opening slowly, but they're with a lot of restrictions. Obviously, social distancing, masks, limited number of people. I wonder if the experiences that you will have if you go to those places will be fun. I don't know. People just seem to need to get out. But I don't think that when they get out, I don't think the experience is probably all that satisfying. Because part of all of these events is the socializing and the sheer number of people there, the crowd that it attracts. Being a part of that crowd is a major appeal of the event. Yes, there are specific things you do there where it's listening to music, buying food, whatever it is. But it's also being amongst people. And none of these events or these reopenings have those crowds. The crowds are either limited in number, or in some cases, like they're talking about opening sports, there's no people there at all. So I think the thought of going someplace like that is, I think, ultimately a lot more exciting than when you actually go in this new restricted world. I just have to say, I'm still quarantining. I have not gone to a restaurant. I'm still going out to the grocery store for essentials. I've gone to a drive-through for food, yes, but I'm not going to a restaurant yet or any place that is reopening. I'm not ready for it. I don't think this is done. And so I'm still adhering to the quarantine rules. That's where I'm at. But I have to say, as strongly as I feel on that, I have to say too that I've a lot has been canceled on me. I've got skin in the game. I'm just as disappointed and frustrated about things that that I planned on attending or seeing. And the one thing that has really been a bummer has been these events that I don't even necessarily go to, but I enjoy either, you know, watching or experiencing on TV every year. And many of my, I will call them guilty pleasures, even though I have no guilt in loving them or being attracted to them. But I would still consider them a guilty pleasure. I enjoy them every year. Now, thankfully, one of them, and I think I've maybe talked about all of these individually at one time or another, but now this with the whole COVID thing, there it's really been kind of a reality sandwich and an impact, because I've always enjoyed them, but now in mass they have been canceled, and it's kind of like you're waiting, and it's like, oh, that's right, that's not going to happen. And so, yeah, there's no question that things are a little less exciting. Things are a little more low key. It takes a little more effort to entertain ourselves and to keep ourselves busy. I get that, but once again, no one says that everything has to be easy and enjoyable all the time. Life is not always enjoyable and easy. Sometimes life throws you some curveballs in which you have to buckle up and you have to sacrifice. And I have found, sadly, that I've missed these even more than I thought I would. My little guilty pleasures. And I'm looking forward to them, hopefully next year, because they have been canceled. Now, luckily, and one hasn't been, and I'll talk about how I feel about that. Luckily, one did get in under the wire. I may have spoken about this in the past, but I know I have. I enjoy watching the Westminster Kennel Club dog show every year. It's on right after, it's like usually the second week of February, right around Valentine's Day. And, you know, it happens pretty much right after the Super Bowl. And it's in the heart of winter, especially if you live in the Midwest where winter can be. And it's the perfect, it's just the perfect for me. The perfect viewing experience, because you're it's in the doldrums of winter, and here's this benign and just kind of comforting dog show. You know, it's a competition, but it really isn't. So there is some drama, there is some suspense. It's a competition, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of kind of free spirited dogs jumping around and running around, and you know, and then there's so many little idiosyncrasies of this event. It's kind of snobby. It's kind of snooty. It takes place in Madison Square Garden, so it's a big event, right? 20,000 people. It's broadcast over two nights on television. It makes the news the next day, and it is addictive if you watch it. And I'm not even a dog person. I've never had a dog. I've always had cats, but I still like dogs, and I am drawn to the Westminster Kennel Club dog show every year. And of course, that did just get in under the wire in mid-February at Madison Square Garden, the Westminster Kennel Club dog show was held. And I believe it was Sadie, the poodle, that won. But so that at least, you know, back in February, it's like, okay, it's time for the dog show. Got to watch my dog show. Can't wait for my next guilty pleasure. Can't wait for my next event. And then everything changed. The funny thing is, I may have mentioned this too, that dog show was there in mid-February, like the 14th and 15th in Madison Square Garden. And I was there 3 or 4 days later, like the 18th, to see the Eagles perform their Hotel California album in its entirety, as well as all their other hits. And that was really one of the last major concert tours that was on before everything closed down. So I even got one last big concert in under the wire in that same venue where the Kennel Club was 3 or 4 days later. In fact, I could still smell some, you know, some dog droppings and some musty, you know, dog hair at Madison Square Garden. No, I'm just joking. But they were running around on the same state, the same area where the Eagles were performing. 4 or 5 days later, there's a bunch of dogs, and I'm sure that they never show that behind-the-scenes stuff. They always show them people grooming the dogs and letting the dogs play around. But you know, I would assume that the dogs have to do their business sometime backstage. They never see that. I don't know where that happens. But so anyway, at least one of those guilty pleasures, the Westminster Kennel Club dog show, did happen. But then they started falling like dominoes. And I expected them to be canceled. Back in March, I expected them to be canceled. They weren't canceled right away, just like everything else. But then eventually they were. And it's inevitable. Wherever there's a huge crowd in this COVID situation right now, if you're going to be responsible, you can't bring 15 or 20,000 people together anywhere, outside or inside. You just can't do it. Or more. I'm just using 20,000 as kind of an average arena size. But you can't bring 2,000 people together responsibly, without the fear of spreading this. Yes, there have been protesters, and there have been crowds of 2,000 and 3,000 and 500 or whatever, and we'll see what happens there. And once again, emotion overcame better judgment. Okay, I'll give you that. That's fine, but the price may be paid. But if you're looking at an event purely from the safety of the participants as well as the audience, if you've got 500 people or 2,000 or 20,000 or 100,000 in this pandemic mode that we are in right now, it's completely irresponsible to have an event like that. And so I knew in March that one of my other guilty pleasures was not going to happen. And sure enough, the call came about a month and a half down the line, and I've talked about this. The good old Scripps National Spelling Bee. I love the spell of the bee, as it's called. In fact, if you go back and listen to a podcast from last year, I was, as much as I love the bee, I was also very upset at the bee because the spellers have become so good, and these kids now study 15 months a year, and they literally, you know, read the dictionary backwards and forwards and know every word in there. So this isn't just kind of casual anymore like it used to be 20 or 30 years ago. Now kids are, and their parents too, I should say, laser focused on winning this thing and preparing, you know, beyond compare. And last year, I believe, I can't remember the number, it was 8 or 9 kids went to so many rounds that they just called it a tie, and they had several winners. And I just felt that that was not a good way to end the bee. If it's a competition, which as it is, there needs to be a winner. And if we have to come back tomorrow, then we come back tomorrow. So I was a little disappointed in the bee last year for this kind of everybody gets a trophy decision that was made because they just went through X amount of rounds and figured, well, these kids are never going to miss a word. Well, you can't figure that. That's not about competition. Then they're getting the more they get tired, maybe that's part of it too. That's what competition is. So I love the bee. I love spelling along with the kids. I love watching them air spell the words. I love them ask questions about, origin and use it in a sentence and pronunciation. And I love them fidgeting. What's so great about the bee is that these are not athletes. These are kind of the awkward kids. These are the brainy kids, the nerdy kids. And they are proud of their nerdy, brainy personalities. They are not trying to hide it. They play it up. And when they're on that stage spelling those words, they are just as committed and just as prepared and just as competitive as any sports-minded person is. And so it's so cool just to see that in them. Because at school, they may be the outcasts, you know, but not and during the B. During the B, they are the rock stars, and they get their moment in the sun. And so that's pretty cool to see. And then just to see how adept they are and to see how well-prepared they are and how much time they've put into this, they are like any well-conditioned athlete, only instead of, doing sit-ups and push-ups, they're conjugating and worried about silent letters and schwas. But that's just, that needs just as much preparation and expertise as any athlete about hitting a ball or shooting a puck or passing a football. And so I love that. And I love to see both the elation and the disappointment on their faces, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That's all a part of it. And it's all there. There's a clock that ticks. There is drama and suspense. All the things that a great sporting event has. The only difference is there isn't a jock within 100 miles of that spelling bee. And it doesn't matter. And I always enjoyed spelling in school, so I enjoy it for the vicarious part of it, to spell along with them and go, oh, well, I got that one, or holy cow, how the heck did they know that word? But sadly, the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which is held every year, once again, just like the Westminster Kennel Club dog show, perfect timing, a key to a lot of my guilty pleasures here, are based on their timing. The Kennel Club dog show in February, kind of a letdown. Football season is over in terms of the Super Bowl. Yes, there's hockey, and yes, there's basketball, but their seasons are just continuing. A lot of games to go. Baseball may be starting in a month or so. So there's this kind of this kind of lull in the excitement. The hockey playoffs and the basketball playoffs start in April. That's when baseball starts, so that's when things cook up. So there's this little, like, 6 month or 6 week lull in the middle of, in February and early March. And for me, the dog show fills that lull in that winter period. And once again, what's so great about the Scripps Spelling Bee, it's usually right around Memorial Day, last week of May. And so it's just about, spring is done and summer is officially starting and the weather is changing and we're going to get ready for a lot of, in a normal world, outdoor activities and things like that. And just before that happens, here's another reason to stick around the TV and watch for 2 or 3 days, and then the finals of the Scripps National Spelling Bee. And I have to say, I really missed it. I didn't think I would miss it as much as I did. I remember looking at the dates of what it was going to be, and I was telling my wife, well, you know what we'd be doing right now? We'd be watching the bee. And I missed the bee. And I can only imagine how disappointing it must have been for these kids who have been studying since last May. They go to school, and then all they do is, for the other 5 hours, they're doing their homework, and then they're studying, and they're in on a weekend studying for the bee. And what a disappointment that must have been to have put in all that time and that effort, and then to have that event canceled. But it had to have been canceled. They had to do it, especially in May. We were still in the throes of the COVID lockdowns, and not only do the kids are all together, but there's at least a couple thousand people that attend it every year, and the crowd being there is a part of it. Yeah, in theory, they may have been able to have the bee. They could have certainly social distanced with the contestants, I guess, but as I think we're going to find, if they do begin to open up some of the major sports, and they think it's no big deal that they can have these games in major sports without spectators. But I think you're going to find that the players aren't going to dig it. The people watching the games are going to miss the crowd. The crowd noise, no, even if you're watching it on TV, the crowd being there, the crowd reaction, is a major part of the entire experience of watching sports. And we're under the impression, I think, at least major sports are trying to come back here to salvage some kind of season, which I don't understand why. Because they're exhibitions at best, and I've talked about this, and I still hold to that. I think that any major sport that comes back in 2020, even though they're talking about it still, I still don't believe it's going to happen. I know they're talking about July and August for basketball and hockey and sometime baseball, and football acts like it's going to have a regular season starting in September. I still don't. I don't care about what they're planning or what they're saying or how optimistic they are. I still don't believe that any major sport's going to happen. And if it does, I'll give you the caveat. it's going to be, as I said to you before about going to a Disneyland or some event, it's going to sound a lot better than it is because it's not going to be true to the game and the sport. And the and we're going to show and learn how important the spectators are to a live sporting event. And it's the same thing with the bee. The bee, you know, you could have maybe social distanced the kids and had the event itself, but so much of that event is watching their parents and their family react when they spell a word right or when they are contemplating the word and the parents and their brothers and sisters are in the audience and they're clenching their fists and they don't know, oh my God, does my son or daughter know this word? And oh, I think I remember quizzing them on this word. You know this word. You could see it in their faces. And then when the kid either gets it right or wrong, they go right to the family and show them, and you see either their elation or disappointment. And that's part of the experience. So I'm sure it was difficult for them, a lot of disappointment, but that thing had to be canceled because it wouldn't have been the same event. And part of it, too, is performing in front of people, the nervousness, the crowd getting into it at any sporting event. And even at the B, you know, you're up there, and if it was in an empty auditorium or an empty room at a hotel where it's usually held, with just somebody asking you to spell, it's not the same. It's not the same drama. It's not the same pressure. It's not the same stress. That's all a part of the championship, which makes that championship worth it. That's the consequence of it. Those are the stakes that are there. If you take away any of those elements, you take away the consequences and the stakes of that, and I believe, whether it's a spelling bee or a sporting event, it's lessened. And so I have to disagree with giving a Stanley Cup, for instance, if they do start the hockey season for some reason. The winner should not get the Stanley Cup. No. They added 8 more teams. Not fair to the playoffs. Not the same. They've bastardized it. Baseball is not going to play 162 games. If they come back, they may be lucky to play half a season. That, to me, does not merit a World Series title and or trophy. It's not the same. Basketball the same way. You can have it. You could call it an exhibition. You could say that they won the league, but they should not go down in history as a World Series or a Stanley Cup or an NBA champion. They should not get the trophy. Asterisk. Sorry, this whole year is an asterisk. Let's deal with it now and get over with and get over it. So I applaud, as much as I miss the B, I applaud the Scripps National Spelling Bee people for having the integrity of their event, of their history, to say, you know what? If we can't do it right, we're not doing it at all. It's disappointing. It's unfortunate. Personally, I missed the heck out of it as one of my guilty pleasures of the year to sit around the TV for, you know, 4, 5, or 6 hours and watch kids spell. But I do it every year and I missed it. But you know what? I'm glad they didn't do it because it wouldn't have been the same. So I've had to get over that one. I got my dog show. I missed my spelling bee, which was canceled. And then about a month and a half or so, another one of my guilty pleasures. Again, a lot has to do with timing as to why it's one of my guilty pleasures, as well as my own personal experience. I love the Little League World Series. Every year, throughout August, and especially like the last week or so of August, from Williamsport, Pennsylvania, they have the Little League World Series. Kids from 12 years old are playing throughout the summer, and they qualify, and then the best teams from each region come together, as well as the world. They have international teams, and they all converge in this small town in Pennsylvania, rural Pennsylvania, called Williamsport, and they play baseball for the love of the game. And there is in the Little League World Series, yes, there is crying in baseball, especially when they lose a big game. There is crying in baseball in Little League. And there are some impressive players. There are some really bad players. There are some average players. Most of those kids won't play baseball past the age of 15 or 17 or 16 or 18. Some of them shouldn't even be playing then. But they're all out there having fun and playing for the love of the game. And what's interesting is in the midst of how they're negotiating to get baseball back, in a bastardized form as it would be this year somehow, we're seeing that at the end of the day, as much as everybody several months ago was saying, everybody wants to play baseball. We need baseball as some kind of a national thing to get us back and our normals and all these cliches and all these heart-tugging kind of misty-eyed views of baseball. Now when it comes down to it, what you're seeing is everybody's in it for the money. There is no, let's just play because we want to play and the fans need us to play. Baseball is showing its true face. It's a money thing. And as I said, I'm actually hoping they don't play because it would be a bastardized season. And I think it would be a very lethargic, uninspired game. I think the players after a while will be going through the motions. I think people would start tuning out because the games, I don't think, once again, would not really have a stake. If you can have a season for 79 games, then why the hell do you play 162? Then there's no need to have 162 anymore. Then just play 70. If you can say in your mind that a baseball team could play a 70 game season and still be a champ, if you believe that, then have a 70-game season. Start every day. Start every season in July. If you're going to bastardize it, it's not real. But what I love about the Little League World Series is that these kids, they're playing for the sake of it. Some of them are really bad. There are errors and strikeouts and 20-run games. And meanwhile, there's some amazing plays and great catches. There's parents screaming once again at every strike and every homer and every hit and every error. You could see the kids holding in their tears if they lose the game. You see them, trying to emulate their favorite player. What I love about this is when they have the graphics about the kids and their records and their averages and their number of hits and things like that, which they have for the pros during a baseball game, those graphics when they go up to bat. But what I love about during the Little League World Series, then they will also have things that make you remember that they're just little kids too. So it'll say average and home runs and RBIs, and then it'll say favorite food, and the kid will have listed it, or their favorite movie, or their favorite movie star, or their favorite rock star, or whatever it is. And so you love that. When you see this, 15 home runs, 25 RBIs, hitting .275. Favorite food, hamburgers. Favorite food, Sloppy Joe. Favorite food, tacos. Favorite actor, Adam Sandler. Favorite movie, Happy Gilmore. Home Alone. Avengers. It's so cool to see that you realize that they are kids, and so it's so messy, and it's so cool. Like I said, you never know. Sometimes you have a 2-1 game, and sometimes it'll be 15-11, and sometimes a team will be up 8-1 in the fourth inning, and if you turn away for 5 minutes and change the stations, it's 9-8. The other way, because anything can happen in a Little League game. There's errors everywhere. There's kids running. They're just reacting. They're throwing the ball everywhere. It's baseball at its most elemental and its most pure. And we can see that the pro game has lost so much of that. And I played baseball when I was a little kid in Little League, and I even played, I had a chance to play when I was 11 years old at Wrigley Field. So, you know, I have a connection to the Little League World Series. I never played in it, but I certainly played my share and played in championship games and in state titles. And I played throughout high school. And we had good teams and regional championship teams. And I won awards individually as well as teams. And I had a pretty good career. So I have a connection to that. And I love watching it every year, so much so that I've always wanted to go, and this year I said we're going to go to the Little League World Series this year. I didn't make my plans yet before everything locked down because it was only March, but I had it in my day planner. It was written in. I had the dates there, and I said Little League World Series. It was written in. We were going to go to Williamsport this year. I was going to make one of those guilty pleasures come alive for the first time. I've been watching Little League World Series ever since I was in Little League. And I really wanted to just experience it in person. And I wanted to experience it all. The games, the crowd, the parents, the food, the stadium, the whole thing. And so I planned on going, and sure enough, sometime in April or May, they canceled it as well. And so no Little League World Series this year. Not only will I not be able to watch it on TV like I have for decades, but I won't even be able to go like I wanted to. Another guilty pleasure swept away by the pandemic. And another one that I've always enjoyed and was actually, once again, looking forward to attending, but I'm not going to. We can't anyway, but I don't even know if I'm going to watch it because I'm so disgusted. I'm not a huge gambler at all. Over the last 10, 15 years, Elton John, for instance, has played in Las Vegas many times. I've seen... dozens of shows in Vegas of Elton John performing. I went there many times throughout the last 10 or 15 years, and I never placed one bet when I went there, any time. Not a gambler. When I go to horse racing, I rarely bet on the horses. I love to watch the sport. I love the atmosphere. I love the horses as athletes. I love horses. I've go on horseback riding. I just love horses. I would love to be around horses more than I am. And so I'll go to the track a couple times a year just to be around that experience. And I got that really from my dad. My dad did enjoy to bet on and used to take me as a little kid to one of the best tracks in the world, Arrington International Racecourse here in the suburbs of Chicago. But as a kid, because my dad was so into it, I would always watch the Triple Crown. The Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, and then the last one, the Belmont Stakes, is the Triple Crown, and see if one horse could win all three races. And I've been such a fan of the Triple Crown, even though I never wanted to go to the actual races themselves, because I don't really like huge, huge crowds, and they always attract over 115,000 people, and now it's become so trendy, and people wearing hats, and it's just getting very look at me selfie world out there. So I don't really like those kind of events at all, but I'll still watch the Triple Crown every year. But what surprised me is that they postponed all three races, but now they've decided to run all three races. So you say, Jim, this is great. One of your guilty pleasures is actually happening. Well, it is, but it gets back to my point about bringing sports back if you're not going to do it right. And to me, most sports sell their history and their tradition as part of the experience, right? Everybody talks about in baseball, Babe Ruth, and we just saw Michael Jordan, you know, from the 90s and the Last Dance and, you know, the great players of the past. They are always talking about their past and their histories. It goes back to 18 this and 17 that and 150 years of this and 200 years of that and all that stuff, which adds to the excitement and adds to the tradition and adds to the experience. And then what I'm seeing is these sports are now abandoning that just to have a sport, just to have it. Well, if you don't, like I said, what kills me is the people that run the spelling bee and the people that run the Little League World Series have more respect for their traditions and their history and their integrity of their events than the major sports do. So while baseball and hockey and football and basketball are all deciding what they're going to do, racing decided we're going to run these races with no spectators, which to me, once again, is going to make a big difference in the experience, even on television, because hearing the crowd roar when the horses come down the stretch is part of it. But then what racing did to me, you talk about bastardizing and selling out your tradition. These three races are always in order. Kentucky Derby, the beginning of May. Preakness 2 weeks later in Baltimore at the Pimlico Racetrack. And then the Belmont Stakes, the longest of the three races, 3 weeks later after that, which is usually the race that if a horse doesn't win that one, it's because of the length of that race. It's the endurance and the stamina. Stamina or stanima? Stamina. I always get that wrong. If my wife hears this, she's going to laugh because she always corrects me on that. The stamina of the horse. That's what makes the Triple Crown so unique. That's its history. That is what makes it. These three races in different locations, and of course the Belmont, the longest one, the most toughest, which makes that horse earn this Triple Crown designation, which we hold in high esteem, right? And it goes back hundreds of years and 145, you know, years of the Derby and all this stuff. And what have they done? For the sake of having these races, they've bastardized their history. They're claiming it's a Triple Crown. Not that it matters, right? But I will not have any of the same excitement about this. I may watch them just for the sake of watching them, but won't have any real stake in it, no pun intended, because they've decided to not only run the races out of order, but change them. The Belmont Stakes, which is usually the longest race and the last race, the most difficult, the one that proves a champion, for whatever reason now, is being held first in mid-June. And not only that, but they've changed the length. It's no longer the longest race of them all. So they've taken it out of order and they've changed the length of the Belmont, which to me now, it's not a Belmont Stakes. But it will be. And then in September, 2 months later, not 2 weeks like the Triple Crown usually is. You know, don't forget, the Triple Crown takes place in three races within 6 weeks. That's a tough thing for a horse to run since they run so fast in these races. That's a tough thing to run, you know, three races in 6 or 7 weeks. That's what makes the Triple Crown winner an esteemed horse, a special horse, able to withstand those challenges and win each race. But now they're having the first one in June. They're shortening the Belmont. They're taking it out of order. Then the Kentucky Derby won't start until September, which means the winner of the Belmont will now have 2 months rest, and then the Preakness will be the last of the races in October, another 4 weeks later or 3 weeks later. So it's not the same challenge. It's not the same races at all. It's not the same anything. So you can have these three races, but don't call it a Triple Crown. Don't bastardize the history and the challenge and the importance and the tradition of the Triple Crown. But that's what they're doing. And no spectators, which is going to make for, I think, a hollow experience. And you say, Jim, well, why do you know, if you don't really bet on it? As a sporting event, I respected it and enjoyed watching it. In fact, even though I didn't want to go to each of the actual races, I said, I would like to, I've seen these tracks on TV so much. I like, I just want to see those tracks in person. So last year, my wife and I went to Kentucky, and we went to Churchill Downs, where the Kentucky Derby is, and we saw a day of races there. And then later, a few months later, we went to Baltimore, where Pimlico Racetrack is, and we went to that track just to see the actual track. And I had plans once again this summer. It was in my daily planner for August, or no, for May, in fact. We weren't going to go to the Belmont Stakes itself, but we were going to go to Belmont Park, where the Belmont is run, in May, just to see Belmont track. So I would at least will have attended and seen all three racetracks where the Triple Crown was. Not seen the actual races or been to the Triple Crown themselves, but at least had been to all three tracks. And that, of course, was canceled in May because the track was closed. But now they are going to have the Triple Crown. But I put that in quotes and say, no, you're not having the Triple Crown. So there's a guilty pleasure of mine that actually will be kind of happening, and yet I feel that they're guilty, and I will be getting no pleasure. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast. And most of all, tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I hope you enjoyed episode 212. I sure did. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.